Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'm very much looking forward to presenting to you our work in Western Kenya, having actually just arrived back from there last night, yesterday. First of all, I just want to explain that this is a collaboration among several different organizations, all of whose logos you see here. So I am from the University of California, San Francisco, as is Craig Cohen. Daniel Quaro and Dr. Elizabeth Bakusi are from the Kenyan Medical Research Institute and FACES, which is an organization in Western Kenya called Family AIDS Care and Education Services. And Dr. Dan Grossman is from IVUS Reproductive Health. And the context of this project is that this group is planning an intervention to integrate family planning into HIV services in Western Kenya, and FACES, Family AIDS Care and Education Services, is a collaboration between UCSF and KEMRI, and what they do is support Ministry of Health clinics and different kinds of healthcare facilities to provide comprehensive HIV and AIDS care in Western Kenya. So we are trying to help them to integrate family planning into those services. Currently, through FACES-supported clinics, they provide care to about 40,000 people, 14,000 of whom are on antiretrovirals. So they are having a big impact in Western Kenya. What I'm going to talk about today is give you a brief background of family planning and HIV in Kenya, and go through our study, what we were trying to accomplish, and who we spoke to, and some of the results we found, and thoughts for our future work. Now, I think it is very hard to talk about Kenya without acknowledging the devastating post-election violence that the people of Kenya suffered a short, eight months ago. This had a huge impact on the country and a huge impact in the area where we work in Western Kenya, as it resulted in displacement of 300,000 people, many of whom were patients that we serve and people with whom we work. So I just wanted to give you that context because obviously that impacts the work we're trying to do and the progress of it as well. In Kenya, as in many sub-Saharan African countries, healthcare is segregated by specialty or discipline, as many of you know. And so if you're an HIV-infected woman and you also happen to be infected with tuberculosis and you also happen to want to contracept, you make it into HIV care, you'll get referred to TB care, get referred to family planning care. So just based on the historical infrastructure of healthcare, there's a huge need for integration. And also, as many, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, but many people here know, funding streams have traditionally been very segregated, and a lot of that is due to our government's support of HIV care and not so much of family planning. And it's relevant to this topic because we actually were funded initially by PEPFAR funding, and recently, because of a reinterpretation of the regulations around family planning services, our project has actually been defunded. I think it's relevant to all of the work that we're all trying to do, and luckily there are some private donors who are committed to this topic. In Kenya, according to the Kenyan Demographic Health and Health Survey that Sarah might know a lot about, approximately 75% of married women of reproductive age report that they don't want to conceive within the next 2 years or ever. Yet in Western Kenya, Nyanza, almost about 20% of women are actually contracepting using modern methods. And there are many cultural reasons why it's difficult for women to contracept. There's a long history of polygamy. There is a cultural bias and desire towards male children. There's a cultural preference for large families. There's incredibly limited access to family planning, not just because of segregation of services, but because of large distances and few healthcare facilities in many rural areas, and more facility-based distribution of family planning as opposed to community-based. In Nyanza, the HIV prevalence is the highest in the country, ranging from around 15 to 21%, and even in some areas up to 30% where we're working, compared to a national prevalence of less than 7%. So this is an area that is incredibly hard hit by HIV/AIDS. And studies have shown in several sub-Saharan African countries that among women infected with HIV who are pregnant, that unintended pregnancy rates range from 50 to 90%. So there's a huge need for family planning among HIV-infected individuals. So our study is part of our formative work for an intervention integrating family planning and HIV. And this part of it was primarily to get a sense from providers, HIV care providers, what they know, what do they think about contraception in the context of HIV, what their practices of provision are, and what they perceive as barriers to integration in order to help us inform our planned intervention. So we've done a mixed method study using both qualitative and quantitative methods. Our goal, and we are going to obtain our goal, is to interview 30 providers. We've interviewed 27 so far. Our qualitative work is based on grounded theory. I think there are many qualitative researchers in the room, but just to explain, it's grounded theory is an iterative, deductive process which provides systematic but flexible guidelines to analyze data in order to help create theories that are grounded in the data itself as opposed to use data to prove a priori hypotheses. So we are working at 12 different sites, and based on initial site assessments, these sites are very busy. They range in size from small dispensaries of medications to sub-district hospitals with health centers in between. There is very little family planning being provided at these sites, and these are primarily HIV/AIDS care sites, with approximately less than 5% of these HIV-infected women using contraception. And they have various demands and obstacles, as many healthcare facilities in developing countries do, with lack of electricity and water. So in just a brief site assessment survey of these sites, they face many obstacles in delivering family planning care. So 3/4 of the sites had a stockout of all family planning methods in at least the past month. About 3/4 of the sites, they have at least one nurse trained in family planning, but very few of them are actually providing it. And in 6 of the sites, there had been at least one person trained in IUD insertion. However, very little provision of long-acting reversible contraception is being performed, despite there being some training among the clinicians. So we interviewed a mix of clinicians, primarily nurses, and community clinic health assistants. These are the people who do most of the counseling around family planning and HIV care in a variety of different settings, which I told you. About half of them worked at sites where family planning methods other than condoms were available, and very few of them, less than 20%, worked at sites where long-acting reversible contraception is available. I'm going to go through now some of the results that we found, the themes that have emerged. There isn't time to focus on all of them. First of all, in talking to providers about their general attitudes about HIV-infected women having children, many providers spoke about a concern for maternal health as opposed to family or community health, but that it was a woman's choice to get pregnant. There was a reproductive rights kind of perspective to their answers, and that the biggest concern was maternal health and that her health should be optimized in order to deliver. This choice, however, was restricted in that most people talked about how this was a choice for married women and for women who didn't already have many children. In terms of what people thought about men having children, interestingly, the wife's agreement in conception was an important factor, whereas when interviewing people about what they thought about women having children, people didn't so much mention whether the father was in approval. And there was more of a family community health perspective, that it was okay for men to have children if they could support the family, but if they couldn't, it wasn't so appropriate. And again, the number of children that they already had was significant. When asked what they thought about how they would counsel a woman, an HIV-infected woman who didn't want to have any more children, most providers went immediately toward female permanent sterilization, so bilateral tubal ligation. And they did discuss, in contrast to their feelings about HIV-infected women getting pregnant, in terms of preventing pregnancy, they did discuss how it was important for them to have agreement from their partner. And again, this concept of a restricted choice, a choice for women who already had children, a choice for women who were married, family planning was appropriate. And there was really no mention of dual protection when it came to women. And interestingly, as a side note, when asked when providers were asked to define dual protection, less than a third could actually give an accurate definition of what that was. Interestingly, among HIV-infected men, providers gave examples of both female and male permanent sterilization, so vasectomy and tubal ligation, although they were talking about a man who didn't want to have children. It was less common for them to focus on the importance of partner consultation, and occasionally they did mention dual protection. So there's a difference there about how they're viewing women and men and their sort of right and ability and way in which they can prevent pregnancy. In terms of family planning in general, the perspective was very much one based on choice, and that family planning was a way for people to plan their lives in the way that they wanted, and that family planning counseling was all about giving people information so that they can make an informed choice about how they want their life to progress. When providers were asked what they think about HIV-infected people having sex, the majority of them agreed that of course, HIV-infected people can have sex, and the majority of them disagreed that condoms were the only family planning method for people with HIV. However, when providers were presented with three different case scenarios of HIV-infected women, all of whom desired family planning, and for all of whom all of these methods were safe, there was a real difference between what people perceived as safe in the context of HIV and what they would recommend. So you can see here that there was some significant misperceptions among long-acting contraception, so DEPO, IUCDs, and implants, regarding the safety in the context of HIV, and then a real difference between their perception of safety and whether or not they would recommend it. So that's where a lot of the qualitative research comes into play to help us understand why these bars are so different. If they think the method is safe, why don't they recommend it? And why are the blue bars so low? What's lacking in the knowledge? So now I'm going to talk a bit about what providers think specifically about integration of HIV and family planning care, and what they see as barriers and what they see as actually facilitators to the process. Everybody spoke about logistics as being a huge barrier, and I'm sure this is a theme in many different countries, but problems of not having enough commodities, not having enough staff, not having enough trained staff, not having enough space. And interestingly, people spoke about stigma related to HIV as actually being something that can help, something that integration of family planning and HIV care services can help circumvent, and that women with HIV often experience discrimination when they go to a family planning clinic because of their HIV status and therefore won't disclose. And similarly, women experienced stigma going asking for family planning care with this presumption that if they're seeking contraception, they're promiscuous, and if they're in a stable relationship, they shouldn't need that. So they saw integration as being a really positive way to kind of circumvent the issues of stigma and how stigma and discrimination affect men and women's obtaining contraceptive care. All of the providers were incredibly enthusiastic about integration of family planning and HIV care from the perspective of they felt that it was their role to provide comprehensive care to their patients, and they really saw family planning as being a part of the whole picture of comprehensive care. They liked the fact that it meant that people wouldn't have to go to different places, and they definitely saw that referral system as a huge obstacle. Interestingly, there were many themes that emerged that weren't so specific to the context of HIV and family planning, one of which is the role of men and contraceptive decision making. Providers felt that even in their absence, men were incredibly present in the decision making around contraception, and that male perceptions or not wanting women to use contraception influenced women's decisions to use Depo-Provera, which is the most commonly used form of contraception in Kenya, and that men actually influenced providers' way of counseling women, and that there was this assumption that women would want to contracept clandestinely, and so they would automatically go towards counseling towards Depo-Provera. Yet at the same time, most providers really felt that including men in the contraceptive decision-making process would be a very positive thing, and that getting rid of some of the secrecy around contracepting might actually make contraception safer for women and could potentially increase the uptake and continuation. So what we've learned from this study so far is that there are significant logistical concerns and needs among healthcare providers and their facilities. And there are many challenges that aren't necessarily specific to the HIV context, but more specific to the issue of contraception, cultural norms, which I spoke about, and covert male influences on contraceptive use. In addition, concerns about family planning side effects, such as menstrual irregularities, delayed return to fertility, and some significant misconceptions about the safety of contraceptives, such as myths of IUDs migrating to people's brains and heart, family planning having teratogenic results, actually causing infertility in the long run. Yet we found that there were many opportunities that these providers thought of, and that they really thought integration was a good way of circumventing some of the issues around stigma related to HIV and family planning, which very much affect women actually accessing care. And that, in general, they were incredibly enthusiastic about integration as they really had this rights-based perspective around family planning in the context of HIV, and really thought family planning is an important part of comprehensive healthcare, it really wasn't mentioned very much about the benefits of family planning and decreasing maternal child transmission, which we all know is true clinically and has also been proven in various cost-effective analyses. So with that, I would like to thank all of my co-authors and most importantly, the providers who participated in this study, as well as you can see many people listed here at the bottom. The study was funded by an anonymous foundation, and Engender Health was very helpful in providing us with some of their instruments with which we use to conduct our surveys. Thank you very much, and this is a picture of Lake Victoria. Sunset. Should I take some questions now?
Yeah, sure. Okay. There's a few for clarification.
Does anybody have any questions for clarification? Yes.
Can I ask a question about the graph you showed with the perceptions of safety and the recommendations?
Sure.
Do you want me to? I'm just wondering about when you were asking those questions, because when I looked at that, my immediate thought was that when they asked about safety, they were thinking about the safety contraceptive methods. If you ask about the recommendations, they're thinking about HIV prevention.
Yeah, we did. We probed for issues like that, trying to get a sense of why they were answering it the way they were. And it really didn't seem that there was a real concern about dual protection or prevention of HIV transmission, that there was a lot of misinformation about these methods to begin with, about their safety, and in general, and then in the context of HIV. And I think, honestly, a lot of it, I'm really confused about the DEPO results because that is the most common use of form of contraception used in Kenya. But the IUCD and the implant, I mean, it's less than 5% of the population uses long-acting reversible contraceptives. And I think that people are very unfamiliar with them and they're very rarely utilized in these rural healthcare settings. And so I think it was more of an issue of unfamiliarity. But I'm not 100% sure. But it's a good question. Yes, Dr. Darney.
Since we can get even in 8 days.
What?
What effect will the new PEPFAR legislation have on the integration of family planning into HIV services in sub-Saharan Africa?
That actually sounds like it's an excellent question, but it sounds like a much more general question that we could all get involved in talking about. So can we save that one
for discussion at the end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. No, excellent. Yeah.
She won't forget that.
I will not.
None of us will. Don't worry.
Any other questions before we move on?
Just for clarification on the presentation.
Actually, it's not a clarification. It's a question. I think it's relevant to your presentation.
Sure.
Did you find that contraceptive information and services or counseling and services were generally speaking being offered as a routine part of PMPCP or not?
That's a good question, and I actually can't answer that because the clinics that we were working in were not clinics, were not PMTCT clinics. So they were clinics for people infected with HIV, and then pregnant women would be referred to PMTCT clinics. However, we have colleagues who are working in PMTCT clinics, and I don't know, you know, specific details, but I know in general, the general finding is that no, family planning is not routinely being offered at all, and it's not routinely being offered in these clinics as well. All the providers in these HIV care clinics, so not for pregnant women, did report providing family planning counseling, but you could see that less than 10% of the patients were actually getting the methods, and less than half of the clinics actually had methods other than condoms available. So there's a real disconnect between need and provision. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.